Now, the fact that you're all in here, for whatever reason you may have come, or whoever made you come, the fact that you're in here and everything out there is shut tells you that Christmas is significant, and you expect the minister to say something about Christmas being significant, and it is, and mind-blowingly so. And over the last few weeks here at CPC, we've had a number of people from different, I don't know how many actually, should have counted, would have been interesting, number of nationalities that have come to church services or events that we've done. And as we chat with each other, it's interesting that different places have different customs at Christmas, and some don't do Christmas at all. I'm fascinated to know that Africa, Father Christmas doesn't go to Africa, apparently, for whatever reason. So some don't do Christmas at all. But the truths about the real events of Christmas are for all people. Whoever you are, wherever you're from, whatever you've done, whatever you think about this, it's for you. And Matthew's gospel is very interesting how he does this, how he retells some of the events, and he does it to connect the Old Testament Jewishness of what's happening. He's sort of all the way through, he's saying, now remember what the other two-thirds of the Bible, or three-quarters, whatever it is, remember this other stuff. It's all about that, all about your past. But in showing these strong Jewish connections, we see that it's for all people. So the Old Testament is packed with promises to God's people, but for all people, for the world. So it's for you here and everyone who's not here. For you to worship the King, your King, but also to call those not here to worship their King. And the main characters in the reading, apart from the obvious, is the Magi, these pagan foreigners, and these Jerusalem elites, the king and the religious elites, and these experts. And what you often see this in the Gospels, but those who you'd expect to not understand the events get it. And those who you'd expect to get it don't. There's a sort of swapping round. So the first characters are these magi, or wise men, as we often call them. And to state the obvious, they're not Jewish. They're ethnically and religiously on the outside. Now, they're shrouded in mystery. Where are they from? We can make educated guesses. Apparently, the BBC did a documentary this Christmas and Channel 4 a few years ago, and they must spend loads of money for an hour documentary to basically conclude, we don't know where they're from. So they speculate as to their names and all sorts. We don't know where they're from. They followed a star. Which star? Well, in the window that we know Jesus was born in, there's a few interesting phenomena that would have been able to be seen from the Middle East. Which one was it? We don't know. How did they know that this thing they see in the sky relates to the King of the Jews? We have less idea. Now, maybe that's part of the point. Matthew leaves that vague. It's all very mysterious. These people, they come and then they go. And we know very little about them. But let's focus for a moment on what we do know about them. So verses 1 and 2, they come seeking. They come looking for this king, and it turns out they're not disappointed. They're determined. Now, we get this a few times in the Bible, that God promises, if you seek him, if you are determined, he will not disappoint you. It turns out all the way through, God's not hiding from us, we're hiding from him. Question is, do you want to find him? Do you want him to know? Or do you want him to find you? Do you actually want to know him? And they don't seek him out of curiosity. It's not just to solve something in their mind. But I think it's all piped through there anyway, so you don't miss anything if you go through there. But do stay in here if you can. They don't seek him just out of, I'd be interested. It's not to solve, they seek him for him. They have a purpose, which is worship. And notice what they say and what they don't say. In verse 2 it says, Their question is, where is he who has been born king of the Jews? That's a surprise, isn't it? Or perhaps you don't look very surprised. That you'd expect them to say, born to be king. So we have a queen, and she has a son, and a grandson, and a great-grandson. And so Charles, William, and George, and if everything follows as you'd expect events to unfold, each one is born to be king. But none of them were born king, because we have a monarch, the queen. This baby was born king, as one of the carols says, king at thy birth. Jesus is king when he's born because he already was king, because he's king in eternity, and he has the promised throne of David promised to him. And so they find him. In verse 10, they respond with great joy. In verse 11, they worship. And this is the thing that Matthew keeps on doing in his gospel, is fulfillment. So verses 1 to 11, chapter 1, 1 to 11, the first half of the first chapter, is Jesus' family tree. And I preached on it a few years ago. It sort of shows all about the promises that God makes to his people. To Abraham, he's going to make him a great nation. Through Abraham, there's going to be that all nations are going to be blessed. David, a kingdom, descendants will always be on his throne. And some others as well, but they're the two key ones. Second half of chapter 1 is about fulfilled prophecy. A virgin will be with child. He'll be called Emmanuel, God with us. And he carries on doing it here. So here is a fulfillment of Isaiah 60. Isaiah 60 verse 5 talks about the wealth of the nations coming to his Christ. And then verse 6 says, herds of camels will cover your land, young camels of Midian and Ephah, and all from Sheba will come, bearing gold and incense and proclaiming the praise of the Lord. Now, we're not told these magi have camels, although how you travel long distances in those days, it's a fair assumption. We don't know where they're from, but distant lands, and they bring gold and incense. In Psalm 72, the foreigners bring gold and incense. It's about the kings from far lands bringing and presenting their gifts and their wealth and bowing down to God's king. So Matthew starts with this Old Testament overview and Old Testament promises, and he ends his gospel with Jesus commissioning his disciples to go to all nations. So it starts with the promises to Israel and ends with proclaiming to the world. Now, it's hard to know what these wise men knew, and I'd assume that they knew very little. But often they act better than they know, and people keep doing that in the Gospels. And they give these gifts, are clues to the one who is born. Gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Now, probably they just thought they're the most expensive things we can get our hands on. They're gifts fit for a king. But in the Old Testament, these are symbolic things. Of gold is often associated with kingship. Incense with worship and prayer, the priests and our prayers. So something about this is a king and this is a priest or even God himself to be worshipped. And the myrrh, well, that's just something very expensive and sometimes used in perfumes, but also for the burial of kings. And what keeps on coming up in these gospel readings is this child is born to die. Let's pause for a moment. What we just thought about is that Matthew's retelling these events and wants us to make connections with the past, with these Jewish Old Testament roots. But the main characters here are not Jewish. So the whole Bible is about God's promises going out to the whole world to restore the whole world, wherever they're from, bringing people from all corners to the king to worship him. And these foreigners get it. They seek him and they find him with joy and worship. And worship is costly. They give their best. They give gifts that are appropriate to a king. And so the invitation's out there for all to seek him. If you seek him, you will find him. It's you that's hiding, not him. And you seek him, you will find him with great joy and worship. And worship means what we're doing now, something gathered that his people, the church, do, but with your whole life as well, whatever background. And there's a hint here that the reason why he came was to die, to make that possible, to be forgiven and restored. Now, the other main characters is Herod and co. Herod and the establishment. The ones you think won't get it do, the foreigners that didn't have any scripture or very little. The ones who you think should get it don't. In fact, they're not even very happy about it. So verse 3, Herod was greatly troubled. Interesting, it says all Jerusalem with him. And the shock is that gospel means something like good news or an announcement of good news or announcement of kings come, something like that. But not everyone takes it as good news. So Herod tries to stop the events. And notice how he does it. He asks the religious experts, where is the Christ to be born? And he asks the Magi, when did you see this star? And could you send information back to me? And then later on, just after where the reading ends, he sends a command to have all the boys under 2 in that area killed. Which is absolutely horrific, this massacre of under 2-year-old boys. It's horrific and futile. Have you thought about that? Think about it. Herod asks the religious experts where the Christ is to be born to stop it. And the answer is Bethlehem. Now, think through the logic. If God, that's the important link in the chain, God, if God has planned the birth of his Christ for hundreds of years plus, with details, for example, the place, what chance have you got of stopping it? Do you not think if God planned it with that detail, they'd have a contingency for nasty people like Herod? In fact, it makes Herod the equivalent of Pharaoh. So at the time of Moses, Pharaoh has all the under twos killed, and Jesus and Moses, the survivors of those awful things, end up being the ones that save his people. And God rescues the Magi and Mary and Joseph and Jesus, ironically, in Egypt, so that when Jesus returns, it fulfills the prophecy, out of Egypt I called my son. And it sets up the next bit of Matthew's gospel, which shows that Jesus is the true Israel. So he's the true Moses, he's the true Israel, and so on. But notice the futility of Herod and others trying to stop this. That if I can work out God's plan, I can stop it. I can thwart God. Now, it's silly when you put it like that, which makes you ask the question, what is the motive? He wants to be king and clings on to it. I love the story of Queen Victoria. Apparently, she said she would love Jesus to return in her lifetime so she could cast her throne, her crown before him. Well, that's not Herod. He wants to cling on to his control. And the religious people, funnily enough, don't want the status quo being spoiled. And people are much the same. I've preached on this passage a few times. I always noticed something else about it. And the thing I said before one time was the big idea is this is not a story about 3 kings. They're not kings. They're magi, whatever they are. We don't know how many they are. We just know they're 3 gifts. But it's really a story about 2 kings, Herod and Jesus. And now it's a story of 2 kings, you and Jesus. So people say things like, there's no evidence for this. It's all made up. And BBC can make an hour documentary about the Magi who we know nothing about. But we know lots about Jesus and there's lots of evidence. And people might say, well, there's no evidence. But they've not looked at it. They've not looked at the facts. If you show them the facts, they'll nitpick and find excuses. Or they look for loopholes with God. Well, if you say, well, I can find a way round this, as if you can catch God out on a technicality. Or they'll say, well, I like to think whatever. This is God. Do you think you can outsmart him or outplay him, as Herod does? Can you stop his plan? People often think God's a bit inconvenient and worship and church and things, and he doesn't really fit in with my program. It's God. You need to fit in with his program. It's ridiculous once you put it that way, isn't it? It's you that needs to fit in, not God. Now, this December, we've worked our way through a lot of Old Testament promises. It's just a small portion. The whole Old Testament really. It's about this plan all along. It's God's plan to save the world and to bring people to worship his king. It's not wise to oppose it. You will not win. It's futile. And often if you listen on the TV to these atheists that become quite popular, rant about God, and you listen to the logic of their rant suggests a God, which makes their whole rant all the more irrational. You can't win against God. It's God. But even here, there's good news mentioned earlier, the myrrh. He was sent to die on the cross. He was born to die with the purpose to remove others, to take their sin onto himself and to die for our rebellion, so that people who've been doing this themselves can be restored to him. And so there's a chance to come off that collision course and to get on with God's program and stop opposing. And here's the point of it all, the point that Matthew's making here, is the Old Testament that he wants us to think about has lots of angles about God's salvation plan, lots of colour to it. That what is the problem that people are in? What is the kind of solution we need? And all these promises then narrow down onto Jesus. So the whole Bible's about him. And the point here is that Jesus is king by right. You don't make him the king. He is king. And so it is right to worship him. And in his coming, what we see by the visit of these magi is he came not to become king, but he came as king and as their king to rule all people and to be worshipped by all people. And it's missed often. It's missed by the people who should get that. And the people who you might be surprised get it, get it. And so the question for you is, do you get it? Do you see the identity of the one in the manger? See, the problem I think we have with the tweeness of Christmas is you look at the nativity scene and it's, oh, look at cute baby Jesus, because it's cute. I'm bigger than baby Jesus, therefore I can outpower a baby, just about. But miss the fact that in the manger is the creator of the universe lying there, that he limited himself in order to save us. And so the right response is to seek, find joy, and worship. And for those who found that joy, to invite others to seek, find joy, and worship. And the point of Matthew is he wants to show that Jesus' mission is to go to all people. Indeed, that is part of our worship, is to go to all people. And the message is very simple, isn't it? Jesus is king, worship him. I suppose you could put that in the negative. You are not the king. Worship Jesus and invite others to come and worship him. One of my faults is, I'm sort of addicted to doing surveys whenever they're put in front of me. And if they come by email or I'm waiting somewhere and they're given a survey, I am compelled to do it. And I think it's really interesting, every survey I get is I'm asked about hobbies and you have to tick them. And one of the hobbies you get to tick is religion. That's interesting, isn't it? Jesus is not a hobby. Church and worship, therefore, is not a hobby. It's what you're made for. There's a funny thing about Christmas services. We don't do Christmas services because they're a bit Christmassy. I was looking yesterday I have an annual Christmas rant about what's on TV, and why is the worst TV reserved for today, the one day I want to watch it? And one of the things on last night was a Christmas service on BBC One, and it said, part of the Christmas tradition. And you think, what's someone missing here? Part of, you know, it's a bit Christmassy to talk about Jesus. It's just bizarre, isn't it? Worship is the right response to King Jesus. And worship, by definition, is costly. If it's inconvenient, well, that's real worship, whether it's gathered like this or with our life. The Magi came with costly gifts, appropriate gifts for a king. We're to give Jesus our best, in fact, ourselves. Now, just as an observation, it's interesting that the Magi, when they visit, when you visit a royal, you come with a gift. Apparently, that's what you did in the ancient Near East. You come with a gift, and the Magi do that. They have these royal gifts for the king. And then the royal will then give the visitors gifts back. But Jesus, as a baby, doesn't do that. He's born into a poor family, probably unable. At least he doesn't straight away, as a baby, give them a gift. But he does give them a gift, doesn't he? Himself. And a task to go to the nations. What would be too much for Jesus? What would be too much for you to offer him? Worship the King and make his worth known.